Hello and welcome to the latest podcast in our series, Living with Diabetes, brought to you by Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. In this edition, we're talking to Professor Partha Kaur, who has a number of roles related to diabetes with NHS England, NHS Improvement, and as a consultant at an NHS trust in Portsmouth. His work has recently been recognised by Her Majesty the Queen, who awarded him an honour for services to people living with diabetes.
It shouldn't matter whether you live in Derby, whether you live in Barnet, or whether you live in Cornwall. You should have access to exactly the same pumps and all the types and what you can do. I would like to really do everywhere, wherever you are, people have the same access to technology.
I'm Claire Levy from DRWF, the host of our regular podcast, Living with Diabetes. Professor Partha Kaur is one of the country's leading healthcare professionals specialising in all types of diabetes, its treatment and maintenance, helping people stay well until a cure is found. He's a major advocate of educating people living with diabetes to help them make informed lifestyle choices and take advantage of the latest techniques and technologies. He's the National Speciality Advisor for Diabetes with NHS England and co-lead of Diabetes Getting It Right First Time, or GIRFT, with NHS Improvement. He was awarded an OBE for services to people with diabetes in the New Year's Honours List. He's also a consultant in diabetes and endocrinology at Portsmouth Hospital's NHS Trust since 2008. He was the clinical director of diabetes between 2009 and 2015. He's part of a multiple national award-winning department recognised by the Health Service Journal and British Medical Journal due to its services and care provided. He's the pioneer of the Sanofi Quality in Care Award Super 6 Diabetes Model, which aims to deliver diabetes care differently and is recognised as one of the good examples of integrated care. Partha is well known as an avid use of Twitter to engage with patients and to campaign. He's been recognised as a social media pioneer by Health Service Journal. He writes a personal blog, Sugar and Spice, Wish All Things Were Nice, in addition to one for the British Medical Journal and his podcast, Sweet Talking. He's co-creator of TAD, Talking About Diabetes, TED Talks for those with type 1 diabetes. In addition to the Type 1 Diabetes comic, he's also created a recent event on closed loops and DIY technology called Setting Up Type 1 Diabetes, Rise of the Machines. He's led and delivered on a long list of achievements, including Freestyle Libre being available on the NHS across the country. Other work has involved input into updating driving guidelines in relation to the use of technology in those living with diabetes, helping to develop a virtual reality programme to improve hospital safety and starting work on increased mental health access for diabetes patients across the NHS. I started our conversation by acknowledging his well-deserved honour from the Queen.
Thank you.
Was that a surprise?
I think it was a pleasant surprise, I would say. Definitely a pleasant surprise. Didn't expect it at this stage of the career, for sure.
Oh, well, that's good then, isn't it? So, looking back over the last year, your blog talks about returning to your personal Waterloo. Can you explain what you're referring to and why that's so important for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things, you know, I've always taken a lot of pride in lots of projects which have worked. And in this particular instance, we were last year or the year before, we had picked up the issue of trying to sort of tackle mental health provision in diabetes care, which big piece of work. We didn't quite go according to plan, and probably one of the particular topics which I would say didn't succeed. So with that in mind, I think this year at a much more local level, I'm looking at what we can do for the psychology provision. So starting a little bit more smaller with the whole Wessex region, sort of, you know, the Hampshire and all Southampton areas, and try and see what we can do. So a bit of a fresh start off for a bit of a break, slightly different approach. But yeah, so it's important in the sense of it's very important for diabetes care. So didn't want to sort of just give up on the project, but it hadn't worked first time around. So yeah, I think that it's more of a returning to that side of things whereby it was not successful the first time around.
And even more so, I would say, during the current pandemic?
For sure, absolutely. I mean, it's much more highlighted as to where things are. But yeah, and it certainly makes it even more important that we do so.
And picking up on, you know, one of the issues, people living with type 1, diabetes burnout, a huge issue. And as I say, maybe even more so during the pandemic when people are maybe feeling a bit lonely.
Yeah, I mean, we have obviously, as some of you may have seen or picked up, we worked together with a group of healthcare professionals, which included a psychologist, and we have been trying to run some sessions and to try and help people with diabetes. And one of the biggest feedback is exactly what you've said, you know, feeling that whole, it's overwhelming, the data all around us, the noise around us. And then, you know, how do you try and sort of square it together in one piece? And yes, as you said, the burnout, loneliness has been quite tough for a lot of people. So, yeah, as much we can support in these present times, with any initiative, any support probably would be very welcome, I would have thought.
Mm. So what are the long-term outcomes following the COVID-19 pandemic that you see, how it affects diabetes care?
So I think COVID will leave some positives and some negatives. I think the positive will be, hopefully, people realizing that you can actually do a lot of things without having to call everybody to hospital or a clinic. And you can do a lot of things in 2021 by virtual means. I think hopefully there'll be that positive thing. There'll also be, because of all the data that's come out, greater recognition of the issues of deprivation. Mm. Hopefully people sort of suddenly, you know, because I think that's one of the worries with technology, that we're making the good a bit better and, you know, it's skews towards a certain population group. So hopefully the data around it will instigate people. So those are the two good things. The not so good things would be, I suspect, the impact of people not having their checks for nearly up to a year, and people falling in the cracks as services try and pick up the slack, so to speak. So, and I think the problem with diabetes is that you don't see the after effects of that till, what, 4 or 5 years down the line. So that's the worry. And I think so, lots of services and lots of specialists are worried about it, quite understandably so. And I think that's where it ties in with the focus needed on the high-risk groups accordingly. So, yes, those are the bits I would say.
Mm. Your personal passion is patient-led diabetes care, along with breaking down barriers to encourage clinicians to work collaboratively in the world of diabetes care. Can you explain why that's such a passion for you?
So I think, you know, I personally believe the NHS does a lot of lip service to what, you know, patient power and patient talk. But actually, if you go to, you know, the proper forums and meetings and stuff, when the decision bodies are made, lots of decisions are made by people, you know, who haven't quite engaged patients, I would say. And a very good example of that has been a lot, you know, pick the world of type 1 diabetes people. What are the main things people talk about? People talk about, you know, we would like hospitals to be safe. We would like, more access to self-management tools like technology, etc. So I suspect it's more about changing the mindset, which we started with a little bit with the language matters thing and trying to say to people, well, there is this fear within the healthcare professionals or even the management side that, you know, if we open up the doors, patients with diabetes, the people with diabetes will ask so much that we can't deliver and they're going to ask implausible things. Well, that's not my experience. I think people are very, very au fait as to what the pressures on the NHS are and what we can achieve. I think and there are some good examples of what can be achieved when you work with people living with diabetes. So I think that if you genuinely picked and be honest with people what you were trying to achieve and then did the sense check as to whether that works or not, I think you stand a very good chance of success in my book. So that's the way I see it, I would say.
And you champion the opportunity for people living with type 1 to have access to the Abbott Libre through their CCG. This has made a huge difference for many people. So can you explain the importance of the GERFD report and what this means for people to have access to insulin pumps?
Yeah, so I think technology to me, I think that a lot of mistake people make is that seeing it just as technology. I don't think it's that. I think the big thing for me is the fundamental part that what we are trying to do is say that technology is an enabler. You know, it's a self-management tool, whether it's a FreeStyle Libre, whether it's an insulin pump, whether it's a closed loop. So I think for me, that is where its importance sits. You know, how do you, you know, asking people to just, you know, prick their fingers, take 3 or 4 readings a day and then make judgments on their diabetes compared to something which is more automated, much more better readings, much more number of readings. I think that probably is the way ahead. So I think technology for me is an enabler, and I think that's the way it should be. So for me, that's a big passion to do. We have made some good progress, whether it's with the Libra, the pregnancy side, with the CGM, and obviously pumps are in a place. They're already funded, but you mentioned the getting it right first time, and what that revealed was the variation in hospitals. It's not due to the money. It was more due to specialists not having the, I would say either the local leadership or the drive or the knowledge to make it happen. So that sort of variation really needs to change. And that's what we're working on. So that's what the GERF report highlights. That's the first phase. And then we make it better. That's the idea. We shall see.
DRWF, staying well until a cure is found.
You're listening to Living with Diabetes, a regular podcast from DRWF. We continue our conversation with Professor Partha Kaur. I asked him what would be the next big thing and what's in store for the diabetes community.
Well, I mean, I think, I recently wrote a blog about what the future could look like. I mean, I think to me, if I break it down, apart from all the other work that the NHS England Diabetes team does around the prevention of type 2 diabetes and all that, for me, I think type 1 diabetes, or even type 2 diabetes for that matter, sits on three planks, which is self-management, peer support, and access to trained professionals. So the things that we need to tackle, in my view, would be, I would like to make hospitals safer. We can't become one of the safest places around the world when people become admitted to hospital. So that's a thing that we would like to do. And open access to technology, but not based on where you live. I think that's quite important for me, is that it shouldn't matter whether you live in Derby, or whether you live in Barnet, or whether you live in Cornwall. You should have access to exactly the same pumps and all the types and what you can do. So that's a big thing for me that I would like to really do, that everywhere, wherever you are, people have the same access to technology. So those two big things, and the final one would be peer networks. I really would like, wherever you are, whichever CCG or GP surgery or hospital you're in, when you get diagnosed with type 1 or type 2, you should have access to a group of peers around you. It's because I think that's the good learning point. Now, whether you choose to take it or not is different, but I genuinely think that if you had access to that, every center provided access, then that will automatically improve diabetes care with it. That's that. Those are the three, four things I think it would be quite good to do going forward.
And maybe just looking back, what are your thoughts on your finest hour? What's been achieved in the last 5 to 10 years that you believe has had the biggest impact?
So I think, I'm at that stage of my career, crossroads, whereby, I'm nearly four years or a bit, and it's a question of whether I do something else, move on or whatever. I think one thing I'll always be proud of is changing the dialogue around access to technology in type 1 diabetes. I think that's what I will always hold very dear to me. So the Libra story and the CGM in pregnancy is very proud moments. But I think also the other thing I probably would mention, which I do like a lot, is introducing the language matters concept into the... People are now more openly talking about it, and I like that. I like the fact that people are more open to the idea, because to me that's the principle of how you engage with somebody living with diabetes. And if you get that right, a lot of things fall in place where you don't see them looking at people with diabetes as somebody different or it should be somebody you do your professional work and life with, and you need to have that relationship in place accordingly. So, I think looking back, a fair few things I'll be quite happy with, but fair few things to do yet, so we shall see.
And you do make yourself amazingly available to the whole diabetes community and offer advice and guidance. Why do you think that is so important?
I think there are two aspects to it. I mean, aspect one is I want people to know that, even though you do a full-time role and a national role, you're not inaccessible. And I think that's important. I've always had that principle for local patients. And I've always found people to be very understanding of time. It's not like people always email me, and they know when I don't reply, they appreciate that I'm busy, or I haven't had abuse from anybody saying, I can't believe you haven't replied to me or anything like that. So I would get it on all forums, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, my own emails. I have no problem with it. I think people are asking you because they're not necessarily getting that answer somewhere, or the local teams are not being that supportive. So there's that angle to it. And I think the other thing is also to hopefully inspire other clinicians to be a bit more open, a bit more accessible. And I think if more people start doing it, then it's just that whole thing again, you know, self-management. Most emails or queries I get is very much around reassurance. You know, am I doing the right thing? Should I do this? Or can you direct me to the right place? That sort of stuff. So, yeah, I think it's been greatly advantageous for me in a national role, talking to people, finding out what they want. I mean, there is no better way to have a, you know, have a pulse of where things are.
So, Partha, why is the work that DRWF and other charities so important?
So I think it's fair to say present times have been incredibly tough for charities, really tough. And you talk all across the board. I mean, DRWF themselves, you guys are doing some fabulous work, and we're aware of that. But in spite of that, people have continued on. And I think you need charities like yourselves to sort of raise the voice continuously. And also, you know, we have got great relationships with charities, and specifically, you know, yourself, me, Sarah, we've known each other. Lee, we have known each other for such a long time. And I think that hopefully the point is that if you feel something's not right, you guys come around and say that, you know, what do you think about this? Can we change this? And I think it's quite important that we have that relationship, because you could be a nice voice, so to speak. And, you know, it's also a sense check for us. So I think, more strength to your arms in whatever you're all doing, and may other people recognize that and support charities in these difficult times as well.
DRWF, staying well until a cure is found.
You're listening to Living with Diabetes, a regular podcast from DRWF. And that brings us to the end of this special edition with Professor Partha Carr, OBE. To keep up to date with the latest news and information, or to discover how you can continue to support DRWF at this challenging time, please visit the website at drwf.org.uk. This is Claire Levy from Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. Our thanks to Partha Carr for talking to us, and also to you for listening. I'm looking forward to joining you again in our next edition of Living with Diabetes.
Living with Diabetes is a Blue Aurora media production for DRWF, copyright 2021, Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation, all rights reserved.